Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Jake, good to see you again, man. It's been too long.
Yeah, it's really good to see you too. And just touch very briefly on this before we click record, but the characters that are coming back on my podcast now after a couple of years since I started Bitcoin with Jake, it's just epic to see the progress they've made. And you are just one of those characters. So very excited for today's conversation and to see what you're building now. To get straight into things, you are building Satlantis.
Yes.
And where I would love to start, and always do this with the founder of a business, like, how in the fuck did you end up with the idea? Was there a moment particularly, or was there like four or five times you're like, God, I got to do something about this? Like, where did that kind of genesis thing come from?
Yeah, so I think what I'll say here is I really do think I found my ikigai, the thing, you know, the ikigai, which is like, what's good
yes,
for you,
yeah.
good for the world, yeah. we can make money of it. Like, I really think I found the project that I want to work on for the next decade or more. And we raised a pretty significant piece of capital last year on this for a seed round from some really cool investors, which we'll talk about during the pod. But when I got asked, like, okay, you know, what's your exit strategy? I said, exit strategy. I said, I'm building this for the long run. Like, you know, this is the business that I want to keep. If I was to sell this, I would do it again. So with that preframe in mind, a couple things planted the seed for me. One was, I don't know if you recall, in 2023, I went down the AI rabbit hole and I was like messing around with LLMs, and me and a small team, we built the Spirit of Satoshi, which was like a Bitcoin centric language model. And it wasn't just we weren't building like a RAG, which is a retrieval augmented model where you just like use ChatGPT and put a wrapper on it. No, we were actually, we developed our own training set, and we trained probably 50 models. We spent like $300,000-$400,000 on actually developing our own weights and biases and parameters, and we had our own model, and we ended up open sourcing it. It was called the Satoshi 7B, and it's on Hugging Face. It's the most downloaded Bitcoin model out there, but we couldn't figure out how to commercialize it. And then along the way, it was sort of like late 2023, someone reached out to me on Telegram, and they're like, oh man, you know, I'm going to Salvador, and I would love to ask your model, your language model, like, where can I go? What can I do? You know, what's cool about, you know, the Bitcoin city and all this sort of stuff? Like, does it have that kind of Bitcoin knowledge? And that kind of gave me an idea. So that plus a month later, I was actually in Salvador for adopting Bitcoin. And my wife and I were there, and she's a bit of a coffee connoisseur. And we went on Google and we looked for cafes, coffee. And we went to one place with a 4.8. Coffee sucked. Went to another place, 4.9. Coffee sucked. You know, and it was like, what the fuck? And we finally found a good coffee, which was like rated 4.2, but it was referred from a friend. And they're like, oh, don't worry about the good ratings. It's all bullshit here. And that plus, so the idea about can you do something travel oriented with an LLM, plus this idea kind of like planted the early seeds. And I thought, you know what? There's something different here. Like a language model, like, is not the right interface, but maybe like a sort of like a smart travel directory where you have locals that can kind of give you recommendations. This was sort of like the early seeds of the idea. And that's sort of like where we started with the idea. It was actually originally, the original incarnation of Satlantis was called Destination Bitcoin. That was the original concept. And it was going to be like just a web directory where we had all the Bitcoin circular economies, and inside each destination would be people, you know, places to go and check out that accept Bitcoin, and, you know, meetups and events and stuff like that, right? That was sort of the genesis of the idea. And then we asked ourselves, okay, how do we verify who the people are? And we thought, you know, could we look at their Twitter followings and try and figure that out? We looked at, you know, the Twitter API, and that was expensive. And then we thought, okay, that kind of doesn't make any sense for a startup. What about Nostr? And then this is how we fell down the Nostr rabbit hole. We realized, okay, well, Nostr is an open social graph. We can query it directly. And then we started realizing, holy crap, actually, there's something bigger here. We could use the social graph in a way that hasn't been used before. Because if you look at modern social apps, and we'll talk a little bit about this later, the difference between a social network and social media, but like modern social apps use your social graph for the purpose of serving you just content. And my breakthrough sort of idea was, wait a minute, could we apply the social graph to something other than content? like reviews and recommendations and a map and all this sort of stuff, like surface different kind of information. And then that's sort of where we realized, wait a minute, this is bigger than just Destination Bitcoin. This is something larger. So we toyed around with a name and we ended up landing on two names. It was Satlas and Satlantis. So Satlas play on Atlas with an S as a nod to Satoshi. And then obviously Satlantis, Atlantis with an S. And Satlantis just had a better sound. So that's sort of how we ended up there. And then the concept just evolved from there. Basically, we realized, wait a minute, instead of just using Nostra to validate who's there, why don't we kind of use the social graph as the glue to help you identify people, places, and events and all this sort of stuff. And the product evolved. We can go through like the story of how we went from like being hyper on Nostra to kind of peddling that back actually to where we are today, to all that sort of stuff. But they were sort of like the highlight points of how the idea came about. And then the last thing I'll say on this is I've been to 50 countries. I've lived in four for an extended period of time. And, you know, those four countries have been four different continents. So like, this is the product I wish I had. So coming back to the Ikigai is, man, I'm like partially autistic. So I've got like, if you see my, like I have folders for folders for folders for folders, like the never ending turtles all the way down folders on Google, on fucking TripAdvisor, on every, like I'm a power user of every app and curation collection thing on the planet. And I find myself using 10 or 15 different apps to like curate the best experience. And this app is kind of with those like ingredients. I was like, okay, I need to build something that is like right for this new sovereign location independent lifestyle. It's like, I want to land in a place. I want to know who I'm hanging out with, where I'm going, the places I'm doing, like, and I want this application to serve them to me in such a way that I don't have to fucking spend time looking for it. So all of this sort of came together and here we are.
Epic. And so I had Jordy on the podcast last week. And shout out to Jordy for joining me. What was one of the things that resonated strongly for me was this idea that the initial target market is frequent travelers. And the word Bitcoin wasn't really used. The word Nostra wasn't really used as part of that. Like, what is this business? Well, it's for frequent travelers. And even that the number 30 million digital nomads, like that really struck me like, whoa, that's massive. And Jordy actually said 30 to 50 potentially. It's like the size of France, right? Mm-hmm. That's a whole country. And I never even thought about it before. So I am intrigued in that I did some angel investing back in 2017, 18, 19 in the UK in early stage clean tech companies in England. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how far one's thought process goes. But I was looking at like the Paris climate agreements and trying to, you know, grow value to solve that problem. And I haven't done any early stage equity stuff for a long time because Bitcoin just caught my attention in such a way that you're like, hang on, you've kind of got startup returns, but with like fuck all risk. This is mental. Yeah. But now I'm like, okay, I'm going to start cycling some of this increased purchasing power into more risky things. And so 100% I'm interested in the equity raise that you guys are going to do in the near future. So in some ways, this podcast is just an awesome opportunity for me to speak to you and learn about a potential investment. But I'm intrigued because Nostra is something that is fascinating to me as a content creator, like not being switched off. This is a big deal. And potentially the misallocation of capital that happens when you build a YouTube channel, they're just like, sorry, guys, you're switched off. Like that is mad. And a lot of the current creators are stuck in a paradigm where it's like, well, they've got a sunk cost and they kind of have to carry on. But if you're starting from scratch, it's like, well, why not just go all in on Nostra? So I'm very interested into this idea of like peeling back the Bitcoin Nostra focus to more like frequent travelers. Let's start there and then we'll tie in like how the technology actually works behind
it. Sure. Well, I want to tease apart a couple of things. So I'm going to take a note here, which is the frequent travelers versus nomads. And then I also want to peel back the where I think Nostra's strongest value prop is. So the censorship resistance is an interesting one. I wrote an article a little while ago called Nostra Unpopular Opinions, and it did the rounds. Lynn Alden reposted it. She's like, this is one of the better written articles about Nostra, because I was like challenging people. I was like, look, you know, Nostra is not actually about censorship resistance and free speech. what Nostra is about, and in my opinion, this is where the future of the world is going. Like, more and more people are becoming creators, right? The internet is being eaten up by AI slop, right? And that is a function of the fact that you have a difference between social media and social networks. So let's just first define this, and then I'll show you how Nostra comes into it. So if we rewind 15, 20 years, the rise of Facebook, Twitter, all this sort of stuff were social networks. The content you saw was influenced by the people you were connected to, your network, right? And that went on and on for 5, 10, 12 years. It wasn't until 2016, and this is a bit of history that not a lot of people know, but YouTube actually, with part of the Google DeepMind team, produced the first really well-performing recommendation algorithm for video content, where you didn't just have to subscribe to a channel to see someone's content, but based on what you subscribed and watched, YouTube was able to infer what you might be interested in. And they got a massive boost in engagement. This changed the entire social world. TikTok, which was called Douyin at the time in China, they were still early. They emulated YouTube's recommendation algo. They were doing some other stuff for TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, was running a news platform at the time. And TikTok kind of was like a spin-off. It was like a little test app, which then blew up. Then Facebook went and copied that.
Amazing,
isn't it? We need to build our own recommendation algorithm. So what happened was these platforms shifted post-2016 into becoming more about serving content. So they became social media. Before then, there were social networks. And social media, as we all know, with media, is all about engagement. And how do you get engagement? If it bleeds, it leads. That's never going to change. Like, the technology can change, but the human psychology doesn't change. So what you end up getting is this kind of like slavishness to the algorithm, which is, if you create sensational crap, you will hack the algorithm and you will go viral. So social media became all about discoverability. So if you can kind of picture a triangle, the top is discoverability. The bottom of the triangle is like depth, your crowd, your followers, right? Social networks were good at connecting you with people you know and seeing their content. Social media is very good at discovery for like new creators and, you know, sending your content viral even if you don't have any followers. The more we've moved there, we've actually left social networks behind. There is no social network at the moment. There isn't a platform where, like, if you go on TikTok, you don't see any content from people you're following. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. It's like you just see whatever the algo serves you. And that's fine. I don't say this in sort of like a bad judgment call way, but everything has a price, right? Like, if that is the mechanism through which you discover content, then you get this sort of perverse situation where you are, as a consumer, just like sucked into a never-ending spiral of fucking slop where you're just like in the social vortex. And then as a creator, you're no longer creating things that are interesting to you or your audience because you don't have a relationship to your audience anymore. All you're doing is trying to create stuff that the algo will help you get discovered for. So there's no depth anymore. It's all like, it becomes surface level. So if we look at what Nostra is a little bit like, the way I frame it to people and the way I frame it to creators, because I really truly believe we're moving into the age of the real creator economy. The creator economy has been growing for the last 5-10 years, definitely. But like, we are really moving into that age. And more people are going to become creators. They're going to be building a lifestyle. They're going to be location independent. They're going to be doing all these things, which is what I'm trying to build Stellantis for. But these people are interested in, or they all relate to this argument. On a social network, your audience is rented, which is what you're talking about before. You build an audience on YouTube, they switch you off, you're fucked. Your entire asset, it's kind of like the difference between Bitcoin and money in the bank. Exactly, yeah. You're on someone else's land, or it's like Bitcoin and money in the bank. Yeah. It's the bank's money, it's not yours. So you build this asset elsewhere, and then even if you don't get booted off, if the algo changes, or you just get tired of trying to like hack the algo, like, and you just want to build some content, you basically become invisible. What smart creators do is they try and funnel people into an email list because they all know intuitively that the email list is the list you own. It's not the one you're renting. So the way I position Nostr to these people is I don't talk about freedom of speech, censorship resistant, none of that shit. I just avoid all of that. I imagine that is the vitamin that they get without even knowing. But the way I pitch it to them, I say, look, you get the ownership of email and you get the distribution of social. And then all of a sudden the light bulb pops. You're like, oh, really? So wait a minute. So my followers are actually mine. Oh, wow. That's really interesting. So then there's an incentive for them to actually come and build an audience on this new thing called Nostr. So that's kind of the way I frame it. I say it's the brand new creator tool. You own your audience, you get social distribution. And that to me is Nostr's strongest value prop. And then to extend that to what I said earlier about the difference between frequent travelers and nomads, we will go to frequent travelers, but there's 500 million frequent travelers in the world. And a frequent traveler is defined as somebody who goes for a leisure or business trip more than once a quarter, right? So that's like 4 or 5 trips a year. There's 500 million, there's 2 billion people that travel each year, 500 million frequent travelers. I'm not going for that market yet. I want to dominate that market in 10 years. Now I'm going after the digital nomads, which is the 35 million people. And I can tell you hands down, yes, there is a cohort of digital nomads that are Bitcoiners, sovereignty, freedom of speech, etc. But it's a small cohort. It's like 500,000 people. The larger cohort is interested in how do I live a more location-independent lifestyle and become a creator, build an audience, generate income online, and be able to travel and live anywhere. And for them, the value proposition of Nostr is not the free speech, censorship resistance. It is the I own my list and I can grow an audience and it's portable. Even though, and this is the best part about it, even though those two things actually inextricably linked, it's just how you serve it to these people. If you know, you go in with the message freedom of speech, they're like, oh, fucking, here's another, you know, conspiracy theorist telling me I'm going to get banned. I say basically the same thing, but with a slightly different angle. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, shit, where can I sign up? Totally different.
Yeah, interesting. I had Daniel, aka B2C Gandalf, on recently, and I was talking with him about Nostr, and his immediate response was like, well, that's why I'm bullish on email. And he is doing a great job, frankly, of building a coaching business around a Twitter audience and an email list.
Yeah,
and I might well become a customer of his because he's got a really cool mentor program that, like, he's built a way in which you can access him that actually is quite good fun and there's results and it just costs X. And you're like, cool, what an easy process for me to go through. That sounds great. So a lot of respect for that because it's working, right? Like, totally fair enough. But Muskie could switch him off tomorrow if he chose to. And if you, heaven forbid, lost all your email addresses, then what happens? Where I'd like to go next then is this idea of a digital nomad. And it's obviously a new product, so you haven't been around all that long. And I'm interested in the traction so far. So who are the kind of people that have come to you being like, oh, this is awesome. This is just what I needed. And how have you seen people start playing around with the product?
Yeah, so we're actually not even live yet. We do a first release at BTC Prague in about 10 or 11 days now. So that'll be like the first
one.
Thank you, sir. We're actually in Prague at the moment. I've got my core leadership team, my head of product, backend data, head of mobile, my CTO, and my designer. We're all here in a house and we're just like, we are shipping product and features daily. I swear to God, nobody will have seen a product move this fast. We had a rough start in 2024 last year. I had an original co-founder and he was a great technical guy, but he wasn't a great like CTO and manager. So he wasn't able to like deliver on the complexity of the product. It was a little bit outside of his scope. And then we rearranged, we threw out the first product. We started building again in January and like all of the foundation is now really nicely coming together. And mate, we're going to fucking blow people away when this product like drops in Prague. Even though it's a first version and it's still going to be light on features, like it's still going to be fantastic. And then over the next 2-3 months, mark my words, by Q4 of this year, we will be the best Nostr product by far. And then by next year, like people are going to be fucking blown away with what we're doing. So,
because I had a little play around on the iOS via test flight. I was actually in Canggu at the time when I downloaded it. And I was like, cool, I have to have a little play around. And it just, what was cool, it was suddenly populated by all this stuff. You're like, oh my God, building an app on top of Nostr is like very, very new, right? No one's necessarily done it much. There are Twitter clones and other types of stuff, but carry on talking me through who's using it and why you're pumped about helping them out.
For sure. So I have been in the last 3.5 weeks to 9 cities at Nomad meetups, at little Nomad conferences, at Bitcoin meetups, at all this sort of stuff. And I'm sharing with all of these people like the first version of the product. And I'm meeting with digital nomads, meeting with Bitcoiners and all this sort of stuff. But I have found what I think is somewhere in the middle there is what I'm calling my ICP, my ideal customer profile, which I think is going to be the prime mover of this product. And that is specifically people who are location independent and treat travel as a lifestyle. So let me explain what I mean by this is nomading has grown significantly over the last 10 years, right? Like 10 years ago, there was a couple million digital nomads. Now, as we said, there's like 35, 40 million people who kind of designate themselves as digital nomads. But the way it is being treated today has evolved. And I'm writing an essay on this now called Location Independence. What does that mean? Unlike digital nomading 3, 4, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, where you're kind of like being a cheapskate, living in hostels, living out of a suitcase, you know, changing place every 2 weeks or every month or all this sort of stuff. Location independence is different, which is I have a base. Maybe I have two bases. You know, I've got a base in Madeira and I've got a base in Dubai. And I work, I either run my online business, I've got a podcast, I'm a creator, I, you know, work for a company remotely, whatever, but I can work from wherever I want. And I have my base, I'm probably there 3, 6 months of the year. And then the other 3 months I'm in Dubai, or the other 3 months I'm in Bali, or I'm in, you know, Colombia, Medellin, or I'm in Buenos Aires, I'm in Prague, I'm in wherever, right? And I have this ability to live life on my terms. I might run retreats, I might run, you know, creator conferences, I might run all this sort of stuff. So this person, they're not exactly a hardcore Bitcoiner, but they're all, every single one of them that I've spoken to and showed the app to, they are familiar with Bitcoin, they have some Bitcoin, but you know, they're more interested in the lifestyle element. They may not have 4 or 5 passports, like the full-on passport bros, but they definitely have a tax residency, probably in like a Paraguay or a Malta or something like that, right? So they kind of have set themselves up and they're living this kind of new travel is a lifestyle. Like they go to cool places, they're checking out different parts of the world, they are going to different events, they're interested in cool kind of food, like all of this sort of stuff becomes a part of their location independent lifestyle.
Something that strikes me, Alex, as you talk, is a tailwind for this market participant is just generally the macro picture we see today and high taxes and the money printer go brrr. And I'm currently a tax resident of Australia, which you know very well as a person that grew up here. They aren't hanging around when it comes to taking as much shit off their populace as they can. And trying to kind of like figure that out is an interesting process. And so if we can hammer a bit more into the problem that they have, in particular with this Nostr lens of like, you've got your key pair. And so when you don't like a client, you can go to another client. And you're like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. And it's suddenly you're flicking between Facebook and TikTok and YouTube, but all in like the same, with the same key pair, with the same password and email almost. What hit me with Satlantis was it's like, oh my God, this is Google Maps with Instagram. You know, when you've got Nostr underneath, it's like you could have an Instagram style filter on the information that's already being posted on Nostr and feed that into, you know, specific locations. And like my wife and I have traveled a lot together over the years and we're always like, let's tag that restaurant and go and have a look. But we don't know if it's actually any good. And then you see someone post a photograph of a place that looks delicious, but you're like, fuck, where is that? And you're like diving around an old social media post. You can't find it. And, you know, first world problems, obviously. The other is like trawling Airbnb. Like, oh, it drives me fucking mad. And having to ask, is it available? Is it not available? Have you got this? Have you got that? But it was a real magic moment of like, oh my gosh, like what you guys are building is a problem I've felt personally, but also I can see is just huge. So how will you combine these things? So you talk about like a TripAdvisor, but also Google Maps. Like, how does it pull together?
Yeah, so this is where I mentioned earlier, the application of the social graph to something other than just content, right? So Instagram, Facebook, all the social apps, all the social media apps are very good at using AI and intelligence and everything that they've done with their algos to serve you content that will keep you engaged. I am trying to take the social network approach, which is we have two parts actually. Let me explain it this way. We have an interest graph and we have a social graph. So When you, like, if you delete your current app and download the latest test flight that we just pushed last night, you will see the whole new sign up flow with the updated interests and all this sort of stuff. And you go through that and you create an interest graph. We then have a really sophisticated mechanism of tagging everything from events to places to people to content and everything like that with these interests. Then the second layer is the social graph, which is me and you follow each other on Setlantis, which means We follow each other on Nostr. Every single account on Setlantis is a Nostr account. So we follow each other on Setlantis. I follow X person, Y person, Z person, all this sort of stuff. And now what the app does from a recommendation, so we have a tab in there for merchants. And merchant is, we have six categories: restaurants and cafes, health and wellness, attractions, nightlife, and groceries and specialty foods. And that's like local markets, farmers markets, all this sort of stuff. So we then, in order to recommend these places to you, we look at both the interest graph and the social graph.
I was going to ask you about your previous raise. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to understand just more on the kind of investing side of things. You raised some funds last year for a seed round. I'd love to know more details about that, and we'll flow into what you're about to do.
Okay, excellent. So we raised 1.7, and we haven't made this too public yet because our lead investor is a pretty private guy, but he's fine with me telling the world, I guess, in this capacity. But you know, Ross Stevens, right, from NYDIG?
Yep.
He's our lead investor. He personally wrote the large check.
Epic.
And he led the round. We've also got Axiom Capital, which is led by Alan Farrington and Anders. And
yeah, nice. Peter.
We've got Concentric Capital, technically TimeChain, which is their Bitcoin-focused arm. So they're a UK fund. We have Bitcoin Opportunity Fund. So James Lavish, Mark Moss, cool. Larry the Pardon, the guys. We've got also HCM Capital, which is Jack Lee. And Jack's one of the biggest like advocates for the Bitcoin space. And then we have a bunch of really cool angels. So, you know, a couple familiar faces like Brad Mills and stuff like that. And then we have a couple really solid like high net worthers that have backed us. A couple Bitcoiners, Nazi guy. So it's a very cool group of angels and a very solid round of like larger investors. So
brilliant.
It was a beautiful round.
And one thing that for me, like in this instance, just as a kind of retail investor, so to speak, I believe you're going to do a crowdfunding. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. So one of the things for anyone out there that's thinking about potentially investing, like the names that Alex has just reeled off, it's just like tick, 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 in that they have the ability to represent what I would call the smart money. So not just capital, but like how do you build a business and how do you do it in this specific space? So it's network, it's intelligence. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what you need. So in terms of the next round that you're going to raise, obviously when you do a crowdfunding, there'll be a pitch deck. You'll have data on what you've achieved so far and the valuation of the company. What kind of money are you looking to raise? And what are the kind of lead metrics that you are able to share that, like, you know, this is the progress we've made in the last year?
Yeah. So we did the seed round. We still have, I mean, we kept a bunch of our money in Bitcoin, so we've got a great runway. We still have well over 12 months of runway. Our plan is to do a Series A next year, and we're going to do that in Q1. And from the Q1 Series A, so some of the metrics we're going to look for is the total number of users we have, what sort of engagement we have, how many events we have on the platform, how many merchants we have on the platform, all of these, like we've got like a list of metrics. Then we sort of set ourselves the plan of you know, raising that money early next year in Q1. And then along the way, I was having a chat with Arman from Timestamp Financial, which is a new Bitcoin-focused equity crowdfunding platform. It's RegCF approved, SEC approved, all this sort of stuff. And he reached out to me. He's like, dude, heard about Stellantis. Have you ever thought about doing an equity crowdfund? I was like, not really. Tell me more. Pitch me. He's like, dude, you guys should do an equity crowdfund. This is a consumer product. You guys will absolutely kill it on that. And I had done a previous like bank to the future sort of, it's somewhat a crowdfund, but it's not really a RegCF. It's more like a SPV model and all this sort of stuff. It's for accredited investors, et cetera. And I did that a couple of years ago with Amber, and that was very successful. We raised like $500,000 in 3 weeks. So I toyed with the idea and I said, look, you know, we're not raising a series out until next year. So I said, could we just do like a special community round as like a top up to our capital right now? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. You can do whatever you want. You can do a safe note, et cetera. So what we decided to do is we kind of like worked it backwards. So we want to do somewhere between 5 to 8 million for the series A. And we'll do that at somewhere between a 25 to 35 mil round. So somewhere in that range, right? So then I kind of like worked backwards and I thought, okay, well, our seed was at 10. If we want to be at around like 25, 30 in the next 9 months, where would we be for this like community round? And, you know, I'll have friends, family, all this sort of stuff come into this round. So let's, you know, make a nice compelling valuation. So we went with 17. So we're doing a 17 cap on it. So it's kind of basically bang in the middle, and it gives our community, friends and family, our customers, people who are bullish on us from a retail perspective, gives them an opportunity to come in a little bit earlier before we go and hit it out of the park with a Series A. So for this round, we're not too focused on like any top line metrics and all this sort of stuff, because the next 6 months, we're going to be rolling the product out in stages. Like every single month, we're going to do a massive release and we'll roll out and we'll then hit another like conference or another event or something like that. And we'll keep like pushing the product out. The real metrics will be for the Series A, because that's where we're going to look for like a $2 million lead. And then the minimum investment at that point will be like 250K, 500K. So it won't be a retail round. That'll be a purely institutional round. So for this round, it's like, okay, if you want to invest like 250 bucks and you want to have some upside into something that, you know, I'm not going to tell people that, hey, this is going to be the next Instagram. But imagine if you could have gone and invested in Instagram, you know, like, put 500 bucks in the early days, or 1,000 bucks, or 5 grand, or whatever. Like, so these are the ability for people to do small checks. You don't have to be a sophisticated investor. You don't need to be accredited. You can do whatever you want. And on top of that, being on Timestamp, you don't have to do fiat. You could actually send some sats, which is fucking fantastic.
Cool.
It's the first crowdfunding platform in the world.
I'd love to speak to Timestamp founder.
Yeah, you totally should. I can get that link up for you.
Yeah, I will.
So
interesting.
Yeah, so that's
the
details.
Love it. The startup valuation process is at best an art. It's masked as a science, but ultimately it's you got to get the money in the door, but at the same time, it's a private equity deal. And really just the next time around, you don't want to be doing a down round if you don't have to. So it's a tightrope in a sense, but I'm not all that interested in metrics myself. I'm interested in you. And I almost don't really care who's in your team. I'm literally just interested in you. And I'm like, as soon as I started playing around with Stellantis, you reached out to me and you're like, Jake, you know, I've got this thing I've been working on. I'm going to do some podcasts. I'd love to come on. I'm like, epic, absolutely epic. The way that content works is it builds a rapport with someone when you don't even know you're doing it. And obviously we've spent some time together doing a podcast in the past, but I've been able to read books of yours or articles or see you on other podcasts. You may have seen other content of mine. And it's just amazing how you can continue to add value because you have digital leverage. And even that is a wild concept. And that's what Stellantis will do, right? So you're building a tool that helps people to improve their life in an area that's currently underserved. And I mean, Instagram, when I end up on Instagram, I'm only using it because I'm posting podcast content on there. And I think it's important to have a presence on the major platforms, because some people only use Instagram, right? But I get peppered with ads. And before I know it, I'm literally just like, excuse me, before I know it, I'm being like lured in by someone who's selling me something I don't need. I'm like, what am I doing looking at this $58 course that, like, you know, I just fuck off. I'm not here to be sold. But really cool. So about the round. So, okay, I got the valuation. I got the, and so how much are you going to try and raise for this kind of friends and family community round?
We'll do say 500 to 800. So not a huge cool amount, because we don't need too much money. And like for me, if anything, what I'll do with this capital is I'll use it to extend our runway a little bit. And then also, because we're an entirely product focused team now. I mean, other than Jordy, who helps me from a biz dev and going to conferences and, you know, giving mm-hmm. this to people, we are 100% product. So I will put some of this budget into go to market. We're going to do some creator partnerships. I've got some awesome like creators that I've got, like, that are in like the longevity space, they're in the location independence space, they're in like the mm-hmm. nomading space, and each of them are going to do like their own channel and content and stuff and start bringing people, because we're going to slowly like brain drain TikTok and Instagram and all this sort of shit and start bringing people to this Atlantis thing. And the kind of content we'll have on there is literally like useful, exactly what you just said. It's not like fucking Instagram where you're just going to end up getting peppered with ads or, you know, shopping and like end up downloading that. I mean, it even got me. I ended up downloading that stupid Temu like Chinese shopping app, and I bought some fucking steak knives that suck. And I was like, why? How did this happen? Like, it was like I got sucked into
you got done.
And I bought some shit that I don't need. I got wrecked, and I was like, man, we really need a place like where we can connect people, places, and events. And like, this is actually, I'll say this as well, is in my opinion, the more that AI takes off, the more that the world turns, like the online space turns into slop and just selling you shit you don't need, the desire to have a network of people where you can get connected in the real world with people, places, and events, like that trifecta for me is going to be more and more and more and more important. Like, people are going to crave more community, more connection, and more curation, but not curation from a fucking AI. Like, I don't want ChatGPT to tell me what is the average of all the restaurants that I should go to and then give me a recommendation of 10 places. Fuck that. Mm. I want to know what Jake said, because he went to Canggu. He lived there for 3 months. He checked out all the best places, and his recommendation should influence what I'm going to see, because our interests, and this is what I was mentioning earlier, is like Satlantis uses both the interest graph and the social graph. So we use the social graph. That's the Nostra element. But where our IP is in this incredible interest graph that we've developed, and that interest graph is ours. That's where you get the value out of Atlantis, and you match those two together. Because you and I, for example, let's just say you're a vegan leftist hippie, right? And let's say I'm a you know, right-wing Chad eating steak. Even if we follow each other for whatever fucking reason on Atlantis, but our interests differ, your recommendations shouldn't have a bearing on my feed when it comes to food and places to go out and everything like that. So we use both, and that's the magic of Atlantis. So it's not just the social graph. You got to like blend both. So when I think about all of that, to tie it back to what I was saying earlier, is like people are craving more and more and more connection, community, curation. This is the direction. And I want to skate to where the puck is going, because honestly, when I see this like 5-10 years from now, this is going to be where the true sovereign individuals and people with like who want to live in the real world are going to be. And the other 4 billion people, they're going to be zombies looking at fucking Instagram and TikTok and Facebook and just be like never-ending scrolls. Those people, I'm sorry, we can't help. But the people who want to be alive, like, you know, I don't ever anticipate Atlantis to be for 1 billion people. But certainly between 100 to 500 million people in that range of people that want to be outside of the matrix, call it, like, that is exactly what I'm building this for. And I think, like, it's a huge opportunity, and it is definitely needed right now. And the timing, man, I've never been so bullish on the confluence of factors for this, like Bitcoin, location independence, nomading, the government's getting worse, you know, people trying to do geo arbitrage and flag theory, like all of this sort of comes together, and it like opens the portal to something like this being built. So, and I'm so fucking pumped for this, man.
No, it's awesome. I'm loving the story. And my brain's automatically going in different directions. I've just got to try and control it for a second.
Let's go.
What I think I'm interested in is the people out there that are looking to build businesses, and Nostra is a new thing. So we don't really know what business models work. So I think just a simple question is like, how will you make money when you build Atlantis?
Members, and we will definitely do ads as well, but we'll do it more sophisticated. So let me describe a feature first, and then I'll show you how this will turn into membership revenue. So one of the features we'll have on Atlantis is called collections. So we'll see that go live in probably six to eight weeks. Collections are like smart bookmarks. So you know how you've got like bookmarks on Instagram, and then you also got like bookmarks on Google, and they're very different. Like
on Twitter,
on Instagram, you're bookmarking content, and on Twitter, you're bookmarking content and
recipes and Twitter's, shit.
Yep, recipes and shit, whatever. And on Google, you're bookmarking places. We are bringing it, but Google's places bookmark is just one big fucking fuck off map, and it's very hard to navigate. It's very hard to use. So what we're doing with collections, it's almost like a merger of these two, is you can collect places. And let's say you've got like your own personal Canggu collection, like my favorite places in Canggu. You could do my favorite coffee from around the world. It could be, you know, coffee in Melbourne, Sydney, France, Brazil, America, doesn't matter. So you can create a collection of whatever you want. And then you can make the collection private or public. If it's private, so it could be like, I'm going to Prague next month, and I don't know where to go, so I'm going to create myself like a, you know, a list of these places, and that'll be my private collection. You could have a public collection, which is, hey, I know the best places in Canggu for like the best gym, the best cafe, the best steak place, whatever. And I lived in Canggu, so I will just share that with my friends, because instead of them asking me every time, hey, Jake, where do I go to? Where do I get the steak? Where do I get this? Where do I get that? It's like, look, just check out my Atlantis collection. They see your Atlantis collection. You start to become a tastemaker. So this is sort of like where the feature goes. There's monetization things that we could do with this, which is, you know, let's say you're a tastemaker. You could put that private collection behind a zap, right? So people have to zap to unlock it so that they can get access
to it. Yeah, nice. Like a revenue tool.
So exactly. So you start opening stuff like that. But where I wanted to take it with the membership statuses. So let's say the free tier on Atlantis, you get full social, you know, features. You can post content. You can do all that sort of stuff. Let's say you get like four collections max, right? And let's say you can just host one event, because we have like the whole meetup component in there. So you host one event a month, and that's like the free. But premium, $8 a month, it gives you orange checkmark, you know, so you're real, gives you extra reach. You get unlimited collections. You can host unlimited events, etc. Then let's say we've got another tier, like creator tier. And a creator tier, it gives you full-on analytics. It gives you more creator tools. It gives you the ability, say, to charge for collections. Maybe it gives you ticketing ability, so you can, you know, host events and retreats, and you can actually generate revenue from ticketing. And then my favorite feature of all that we'll build for creator tier is the ability to post on Atlantis and then distribute also to Instagram, TikTok, etc. So we'll build a scheduling tool inside, and this is part. I mean, dude, people are paying $500 a month for Hootsuite so that they can schedule posts. Dude, if I can do that and give it to them for $40 or $50 a month, number one, I'll crush Hootsuite, which is a $400 million company. And number two, Atlantis will become the platform that they use Instagram and everything for. So it'll be healthier for them, and it'll become, we become the wedge point. So there's some ideas there. So you got free.
Yeah, so like a kind of buffer creator. And Hootsuite.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Competitor. Because I've even, sorry to cut you off, Alex, this is what happens with good conversations, is immediately caught by that. Because one of the problems I currently face as a creator is I'm posting on YouTube, I'm posting on Spotify for podcasters for the RSS feeds, which goes to iTunes and Fountain and everything, and on Rumble and on X, and you're putting some stuff on Instagram as clips and some stuff on TikTok and all this stuff, right? It's like, why don't you just post it in one place and it goes everywhere? And I've been thinking about how I might build a website where it's like, okay, well, you can have like a blogging function that ends up as a Nosta read, but also goes to an email list, also sits on your website. And there's just a number of things I've been playing around with, but that was just for me as an individual. It'd actually be much better as a product for a whole load of creators to use at the same time.
Totally.
And that's essentially what you've just described, but not just the product that replaces the scheduling tools and the production side of publishing, it's also the social graph, which is nuts. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay, you can't have taken off you.
Yeah, exactly. and you embed it in the same bloody product. So that way you become the lightning rod.
Really cool.
Central thing. And then.
And so I think go on, please, Alex.
I was going to add one more layer to this. So imagine free, premium, creator. we'll probably have a merchant tier as well. So like businesses who want to own their account, and then they can have, you know, we'll give them menus and the ability to order online and all this sort of stuff. So then you start to encroach on the DoorDashes of the world and all this sort of stuff. Exactly. Mm. And then my favorite one, we will probably also do a premium tier like a platinum tier or something like that. We'll figure out a name for it. And that'll be something like 10K a year. And you get invited to specific networking events just for the platinums. And for those ones, we'll probably bring like a Tony Robbins in to give a talk and all this sort of stuff. Or we'll bring like,
a
sailor in and stuff like that. And I think that people have such a desire for something. They have to be part of like an exclusive club. And you've
absolutely
got such beautiful monetization like levels with this kind of a product, because we're not just about just the social. It's also a club, because we are attracting a particular kind of person.
And that even makes me think about something like Soho House, that is a kind of Condé Nast traveler, high-end boutique style club that has done phenomenally well. I mean, just 100%. It was basically some bloke took over the shop of I think they started in the 90s above a cafe in Soho in some redundant space, and it's now this like multi-million-dollar hotel empire. Essentially, it's phenomenal what they've managed to build. And I've been to many of their locations, and it's good fun. It's actually like, cool, I would go there again. What I want to go through now, this is definitely something that Bitcoin teaches you, but it's not about volume, it's about value.
Yes.
And so the description you went through just now of like the different sizes of markets, they're important. But at the end of the day, you just need a handful of people that love what you've built, and you deliver them great value, and they'll pay for it. So the amount of time my wife and I, just to use this small example, have spent trawling through Google Maps trying to figure out where we want to eat. And her main problem is often she can't find the menu, and she has specific dietary requirements. Mm-hmm. I actually tried to start a company in this space a number of years ago. It was called Foodoo. It was actually for home cooking, but it was all about preferences. And like, we have such specific preferences. Every single person has specific preferences. But like, you get this handful of cookbooks that do well that just sell you all the same. It's strange how it functions. So I would have no problem at all paying a subscription for a service that meant that it was just a shortcut to like, this is actually where you want to go and have dinner, and this is probably the bit of the menu that you want to order. And generally, it's already like three or four steps ahead. Okay, I have a question. If anything resonates, please do jump in from that.
For sure. I mean, this is exactly the kind of stuff we want to cater to, because what you said, value over volume, I say that in a different way, which is quality over quantity, which is the exact same thing.
Yes.
Right?
It's not about your follower count at all.
Exactly.
It's much more about like, how much of a good time can you have with a handful of great friends?
100%. In fact, I'll say one last thing to this, which is going to be an upcoming feature for later this year, is we function on the follower graph now with Nostr. We're actually gonna build our own upgrade to that, which is called connections, and it's a little bit like LinkedIn, which is mutuals. So if it's basically a two way follow that is not just like a one way follow, which is it's an influencer and I'm following them. It's like an audience. This is like connections, and connections will have a deeper relationship on the app. They'll be able to see more stuff about each other's profile so that they can actually maintain a deeper relationship, and that they will see different things about the app. Their respective recommendations will have a stronger weight inside the map, the directory, and all this sort of stuff. So I'm really like that the quality over quantity thing is like so important to me, and it's something that I'm so glad you picked that up.
No, it's cool. And that has brought to mind something else that I saw was very cool. So shout out to Arvi, who does Plebchain Radio and is building a product called Nos Fabrica. And I've seen a few of the details about it. I've been sniffing around thinking of doing some angel investing, and I feel like Nostr is actually the thing. It's like, what happens if you go really heavy on some Nostr investments on top of Bitcoin? It's like this like trifecta, as you described. It's like Nostr, AI, Bitcoin all together. Well, some equity in these businesses right now is not a bad bet. But what caught me about that business plan was the problem I've had as well, where it's like you go to a health practitioner, an osteopath, a chiropractor, whoever, and they're like, what's your history? You're like, oh my God. how much time have we got? We got 2 hours to talk through everything that's happened in my life. And so health records are either held by a private company. Okay. Is that the right place for them to be? Or by some kind of government? And what would it look like with a Nosta key pair and the user being in charge of the data and being able to selectively reveal parts of your health history to different practitioners? Now, the equivalent to what you've just described is a connection, and you could have preferences for the user as to how much information you show your connections.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And it's like, okay, I'm the Nosta key pair driver. The Atlantis account is just one of those, but I've then got my health practitioner one, I've then got whatever. And each one is going to help you have a very sophisticated filtering tool on what information you reveal. And it's even almost coming back to this idea of like secrecy is different to privacy.
Yes.
And privacy is this idea that you can reveal to the world what you want. And it's just a much more in-depth technology than a digital walled garden where you hope you don't get deplatformed. And I'm so bullish on it. And seeing you building on it is epic. I have a question though, Alex, after talking too much, which is really around this idea of the pre-existing social graph that exists due to Nosta. As an entrepreneur, when you're like, oh, I want to build the next Instagram, it's like, okay, well, where are your users? Oh, well, the users need to see other users. You've got this carrot and stick problem or chicken and egg problem, however you want to describe it.
Yep,
but
yep.
If you're building on Nosta, all the communications out there, you've just got to filter it differently potentially. So the social graph's already there. You as a private business don't have to go and create it. How important is that for you building a business on Nosta?
Yeah, I think that's super important. So before I talked about the benefit of Nosta for people, the benefit of Nosta for us as a business is specifically, you know, you called it the chicken and egg problem. What we call it in the network space is the cold start problem. Is you don't have users, so therefore the content is not there. You're kind of like stuck between a rock and a hard place. So Nosta helps you as a business bootstrap off off a pre-existing social graph. Now, you said the magic word, which is filtering. So for people that we want to cater to, like, you know, travelers, location dependents, all this sort of stuff, they probably don't want to see fucking Good Morning and all this sort of crap. You know, like there's a lot of noise on Nosta. They're probably not interested in that. So what we've done is we've like whitelisted accounts and content and everything like that. And we've done our own Web of Trust stuff to make sure that the content that you see on Satlantis that is being pulled from Nosta is more relevant to the interests that you select when you're coming on. Because you might say that you're interested in Nosta and Bitcoin and everything like that, in which case you will see information about Good Morning and Nosta and Bitcoin and all this sort of stuff. But if you feel interested in nomading or health or something else and you don't give a shit about that stuff, then you shouldn't see that content coming from Nosta. So we'll be listening for different stuff. So we kind of use Nosta in two ways. One, to solve the cold start problem so that there's content and people there from day one. But then number two as well is I can confidently go to a creator and say, hey, we launched last month. And if you come and post content on Satlantis, you're actually going to broadcast to an audience of 300,000 people. They're like, huh? How? You got 300,000 users last month? No, not exactly. We got 5,000 users. But we are plugged into a larger social graph, which means you as a creator can still broadcast to a much larger audience. And that gets them in. So for us, it means it's a better selling point for the business to bring on creators, because that's important. Like the last thing a creator wants to do is waste their time creating for a, you know, network of 5,000 people. And it also gives us, for the people who don't want to be creators, they want to consume some content and find stuff and, you know, engage and all this sort of stuff. It gives them the ability to get access to a larger thing. So it's a broadcasting mechanism and it's a cold start solution. And I think that's really, really important, because 5-10 years ago, to have done that, you probably needed $10-20 million to start with. Now I can start with $2 million, which is what I raised, in order to get that same effect. And I think that's massive.
And yeah, okay. And so when you think through that, I like this phrase of open protocols win. I know about it because of going deep down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, and the amount of eyeballs that have combed over the Bitcoin code is more than any other piece of code ever known to man. But it's also this idea that, you know, you can opt into Bitcoin or you can opt out. And if you opt out, that's totally up to you, no problem. But when you opt in, you're able to build on top of this thing. And so there's that great graphic that I've seen a number of times where it's like Bitcoin is the ability to own the network, and what gets built on top of it only drives more value into the network itself. Unlike when you had Google and Facebook and Amazon being built out of the last kind of internet wave, shall we say, you needed to own the equity in those individual companies. So you had to be able to stock pick, and you had to be able to get into deals that were exclusive potentially, or whatever, just right time, right place. Whereas actually it's like, oh, hang on, I can just own a piece of the Bitcoin network, and whatever value it's created, I end up accruing some of that purchasing power. When it comes to Noster, obviously Bitcoin's the native token, shall we say, for the Noster protocol, but the user gains value as more users turn up, like the classic network effect. But equally, the businesses that rock up only add fuel on top of that. Is that the correct way to think it through? And yeah, where might I be slightly wrong there?
Bitcoin is a unique piece. Bitcoin is very different to Noster. I think we kind of, and this is another one of my unpopular opinions in the Noster space, is that I think we treat Noster a little bit too much like we treat Bitcoin.
Okay.
Bitcoin, you don't have to invest in a business in order to accrete the value of Bitcoin, because as businesses build, as you described, they increase the value of Bitcoin. That's not the same on Noster. Noster is actually more like the internet in the sense that, you know, the internet didn't accrue value. You couldn't buy a share of the
internet. Yes, you couldn't own protocol. HTTP.
Exactly. So you bought into Amazon, Google, etc. It's actually going to be the same on Noster. So
okay.
Noster won't accrue any value. It's a valueless protocol. There's no token. There's nothing. So in order to benefit from Noster, we do what we do best, which is we buy into companies. And in my opinion, private companies are the ultimate vehicle for the accrual of information. Sorry, for the accrual of value. Bitcoin is an anomaly. Bitcoin looks and feels like a fucking investment just because we are discovering money and it's monetizing.
Yeah, great again. Exactly, I love that.
Exactly,
make
savings great again. So sometimes I think there's a bit of like wire crossing, is that because Noster and Bitcoin are so related, we start to think, oh, okay, you know, the Noster protocol might accrue some value. It's like, no. Noster is just another layer. So it's like you got, you know, TCP, IP, HTTP, now you've got Noster. It's just another layer, which means you have a larger design space for the web. So if in the last era of the web, you invested in the Googles and the Amazons of the world, or in the second era, you invested in the Facebooks or the Instagrams, this is the third era of the web, and you'll be able to invest in a new kind of product that adopts a new design space on top of 5 protocols instead of 4. You know, the current internet stack is 4 protocols. The new internet stack, in fact, you could probably say 6, because you could argue that Bitcoin is another part of that internet stack. Although Bitcoin kind of like stands apart because it is a protocol with value embedded. But like if you wanted to slap it in there, you've got 6 layers to the protocol now. So you have a larger design space. So we will see new kinds of companies that weren't possible in the last 2 eras of the web. And I believe, knock on wood, that Atlantis will be one of those new companies. Like when I think about this, like 5, 10, 15 years from now, I can't imagine people using TripAdvisor, Google Maps, and so on. Like that's not going to, like, travel is a $12 trillion industry and it's going to continue growing. Travel's never going to go away. Like I love industries like that are never going to go away. How people do travel is going to completely shift and transform. And sure, you know, there will probably be the dumb run-of-the-mill masses travel, but there will be a new kind of mechanism for location independence, which is what I want to go for. And what the kind of product that is necessary for that depends upon the existence of 2 new layers on the internet, which is money as a protocol and identity as a protocol. And to me, that's Bitcoin and Noster. And that gives us the ability to build something special here.
And it's funny, actually. So we've been recording for over an hour. Obviously, we've had a couple of Wi-Fi glitches, but we haven't used the word identity in relation to Noster once. Mm-hmm, but that, I think, is actually the best way of describing it. It's like now we have a way of having a digital ID where the user is in control, not some dystopian Palantir-funded beast that no one actually wants. Well, Alex, listen, I'm conscious of time. It's been fantastic to catch up and to hear what you're working on. And I, for sure, like subject to some howler that I come across in the small terms, will be we'll be getting involved in the timestamp raise, and I'm really pleased that that's turned up at this time to be able to do that. Is there anything else that you'd like to share or cover that you feel like you haven't had the chance to?
Oh, mate, there's so much. We could go on and on about this. Like,
we could do hours.
Yeah, totally. We should probably do something in 2 months when the product has been like in market for a little bit and like people have had a chance.
Very welcome to anytime.
We can dig into it a little bit. And yeah, I mean, you know, for people who are interested in more about the story, so I started a Substack and I also published this stuff on Nostra as well, but the Substack is the easiest place to kind of find it, is like my thinking on, I call it social 2.0, and it's just my thinking on how the world is going to evolve and how the social layer is going to evolve. And obviously a core part of that is Nostra, Atlantis, what we're building. And I've started publishing every 2 weeks, kind of like a release notes, kind of tracking our progress as a business, like what we're shipping, the features we're building, how we're looking forward into the world, all this sort of stuff. I think I'm also going to set up a newsletter. One of my investors is pushing me for this. He's like, dude, you're a great writer. He's like, you should start writing something specifically about you and your lessons in building a new category defining product. And I think I'm going to start that as a newsletter. I think I'm going to call it Denting the Universe. So kind of like a hat tip to Steve Jobs, because I think we've been in the era, like, there's been no great consumer applications really other than Uber and Airbnb. That was the last great consumer app. I don't see, you know, there haven't been any real like consumer breakthroughs. Consumer kind of died. Like, we've been in the age of SaaS and B2B, like, you know, the Slacks of the world and all this sort of stuff for the last decade almost. I think consumer is about to make a massive comeback. And I think the ability to build a new kind of product that was unlike what came before has opened up with Nostra, Bitcoin, AI, and all this sort of stuff, like kind of converging together. And if I kind of look back in the last decade, all the new products have been more like one to N innovations, right? Like, they've just been incremental improvements on what we already do. I think the world is ready for something that is really zero to one again, like, to use a Peter Thielism, is like that, like Satlantis, something like Satlantis doesn't exist. Like, and this is what gets me excited, gets me out of bed every morning. And this is why I think I was able to, you know, raise the money so quickly on the seed round, is like the investors could feel my like bullishness.
Yeah, they're like,
and I'm like, man, I fucking figured it out. Yeah, exactly. They're like, okay, let's roll. It was funny. That's like kind of what Ross said. He's like, look, man, he goes, I don't use social. He goes, I kind of, you know, travel very differently to you, but he's like, I can sense that you're onto something. So it's like, let me know how much. Yeah. I was like, let's fucking go. So, you know, this excites me. It's like constructing a new category of product in the same way Google did. Google, I created a new category. Facebook created a new category. Instagram created a new category. Like they were a zero.
It's
not
like a photo's old, but it's delivered in a different way that wasn't possible before.
Totally. Cool. New category. So travel is not old. Like, reviews, recommendations are not old. But the idea of applying your social graph to all of this hasn't been done before. Boom, there's a fucking zero to one moment. It gets me excited.
Nice. And it's kind of making me laugh a little bit, because I'm getting older these days. I'll be 37 next week. But I went traveling when I was 18 with a book, you know, Thailand, Lonely Planet, backpack, 18. I flew from London to Bangkok. And it's like, we didn't know where we were, let alone have a smartphone that was able to take us to the, you know, the perfect place to eat food and to meet the people that you want to meet and to go to the places that your friends had previously been to. And just, it's a whole new ball game, which is very, very cool. Well, Alex, I have to say, I'll wrap it up here, but I only just started reading the Bushido of Bitcoin. One's reading list. There's just so many things all over the place, but it's forced me. It's like, no, I'm going to have you on the pod. I need to go and have a look at that book. All right, download it, start reading it. And I'm already like really loving the lens that you brought to Bitcoin with that. And even if you're wrong about Satlantis, it doesn't matter, because it's the action that leads to clarity. Even the LLM that you mentioned that you built, that helped you see Satlantis. So if this current iteration doesn't work for some reason, what will come out of it will be more powerful. But it's those virtues and the ability to be productive, right? So I'm actually going to do some shit. I don't care what everyone else does. This is who I am, and this is what I'm going to do. that to me is the coolest thing. And that's what I would be investing into very specifically, rather than like the niche or the metrics thus far. And so we need more people like you. And I love that. So
thank you.
On that, if anyone ever wants to reach out to you, how do they do that? And we'll close up there.
Easy, man. I mean, find me on Noster. There's, you know, my DMs are open. I mean, I'm obviously also on Twitter. So it's like, find me there, Svetsky Writes. Instagram as well, although I'm not active on Instagram. The last time I posted there was like a year or two ago. Where else? I mean, my Substack, I write there. In fact, if they go to bushidoofbitcoin.com, all of my links are there. Or satlantis.io/Svetsky. All my links are there.
Sure.
Like that's probably the two easiest places. And then just hit me up anytime.
Awesome, Alex. Thank you. We'll also pop those links in the show notes as well. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. Really good chatting with you again.